Welcome to the Closing Mark Report. It's February the 28th, 2007. I'm Todd Gleason. In a few moments, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Paul Cooley of ADM Investor Services out of Oakland, Illinois. And later in half hour, we'll discuss the cash grain market with Kay Whitlock of Terre Haute Grain in Terre Haute, Indiana. Dave Dickey will be along in a moment with all the day's agricultural news, including these stories. The administration has made a bid for continued TPA. The Secretary of Ag says FSA's computer system is failing. And Tom Harkin from Iowa says the food nutrition programs are not treating property owners fairly. He wants the asset limit raised. Also, don't forget that we'll talk with Drew Lerner of World Weather Incorporated out of Kansas City. That comes up just after the bottom of the hour. Along the way, we'll hear Daryl Good's thoughts on the upcoming acreage report. It all happens on this Wednesday edition of AM 580's Closing Market Report. Up 7 3/4 in the bean pit at 8.24 1/4. March bean meal 90 cents higher at 2.24.40. The March bean oil at 30.25, and they finished up 11 cents on the afternoon. Over at the Mercantile Exchange, a down day, 15 cents lower in the nearby March feeder cattle at 101.60. Feb live cattle off 30 at 94.45, and the April's at 97.05. We're down 40 for the day. Lean hogs managed to gain 32.5 cents at 67.75 for the afternoon.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Joining us now to take a look at what happened at the Chicago Board of Trade and the Mercantile Exchange is Paul Cooley of ADM Investor Services in Oakland, Illinois. Good afternoon to you, Paul.
Good afternoon, Todd. And hey, we are getting a lot of wonderful compliments about the Beef House Outlook meeting and the way Bob Wright handled the crowd and the beautiful facilities over there and the wonderful food. And, hey, it's a lot of just wonderful comments and a lot of nice visitors there yesterday.
I'm glad you brought Bob up. He handles the Beef House and takes care of us each and every year over at the Beef House. This is one of the few places, I think, Paul, in the two-state region, maybe in the whole nation, but the two-state region where you can walk in the door and say, we're going to have an event, and we think there will be something like 200, but could be as low as 150, and it might go really pretty high. We just don't know what registrations are going to be, but we don't want to pre-register because it's free, and they can handle a crowd that shows up of 411 people counting us.
I knew it was busy when I saw Bob and his lovely wife Bonnie over there moving a lot very quickly through carrying food trays. So, they really rolled up their sleeves and took care of us, and it was one of those wow jobs.
It was a wow job. Many thanks to the Beef House. And for those of you who are listening, if you have never been to the Beef House or you have or you need a place to go this weekend, it's a great place to go. We hope you make it over there. It's exit 4 just inside the Indiana border off I-74 right there at Covington. Take the exit, head north, and you're only about a block off the interstate at the Beef House. Our thanks much again to Bob Wright and Company over at the Beef House in Covington, Indiana. We had a great day. It was a busy day there, a busy day in Chicago yesterday, and it turned around again today, and another busy day. Tell me about the marketplace. It had a gainer today as opposed to a loser.
That's right. And, of course, a couple of things. The word out of the market yesterday, of course, was China raising their interest rates, mm-hmm. and they were worried about a runaway stock market. And they don't want their country to turn into a market like the United States for some reason. They're very concerned about the runaway stock market, and they put interest rates up, and the Japanese yen yesterday rallied, and the U.S. stock market went down. And Bernanke and the U.S. stock market turned around. The Chinese stock market turned around last night, and on general ideas that, yes, you make a profit over there. You pay so much taxes. They weren't going to raise taxes. And as a result of that, we did see and hear the Chinese bought very aggressively in the soybean market in the world. And the Koreans bought very aggressively in the world corn market. And the Mexicans also Mexico bought very aggressively in the U.S. corn market. So business is going on at the $4 mark and $8 beans and wow, we had a tremendous day, turnaround day, and the stock market's also showing a good gain today. Crude oil even was higher.
Yeah, crude oil up 29 cents at this hour at $61.75 a barrel in the April, and the Dow Jones Industrial Average up just about 90 points at 12,306 for the afternoon. You talked about some purchases in the corn and the beans, and then if you look at Kansas City, they had a big day in the wheat market out there. What was driving that higher?
Todd, the spreads were very aggressively, you know, I'm going to say maybe deliveries were a major factor there, and I've got a pass on that one.
Well, that's okay. I wonder.
Deliveries were
I just took a look at that. The March contract up 18.5 cents. I wondered what was happening in Kansas City. But the May and July were up as well, although July futures up just 4.25 at $5.17 for the hard red winter wheat. And that correlates fairly well with what happened in Chicago, up between 4 and 5 cents for the soft red winter wheat. So let's walk back to the corn and the bean market here. There was a pretty good gain in the corn market, up 14.25 in their nearby December futures at 4.20. They were up 10.5, their high price for the day at 4.20.5. So they settled just a half off the high price. A good gain. Mexico in the marketplace, this is a good sign. Mexico's been a very heavy supporter of corn in the United States over the last year. Will they continue to be that way? They've been a new and expanding export market.
Of course, we're hearing stories about the price of corn rallying in Mexico. They're starting to make some major changes in some of their sweetener agreements, and some of those things are positive for trade with the U.S., which is great. A couple things. We know that exports are good for corn, and we do, as Dan Bassi says, this is a world market now, and also we have to relate everything to energy, and it's not just a U.S. energy situation in which we turn grains into renewable energy. It's around the world, and it's the green revolution, so to speak, around the world, and also a very profitable deal. And that, therefore, we have to respect not only feed demand, export demand, and also in industry, industrial use of corn and soybeans, and I think that this is the new era that we have to watch. And of course, I think we also should tip the hat for Dan Bassi, because he spent a lot of time with us, and he helped make the day great.
Yeah, in fact, for those who didn't make it over to the All Day Ag Outlook, you know that Dan Bassi of Ag Resource joined us as the keynoter for the program during the day yesterday, presented a program on ethanol. That PowerPoint is available to our listeners and to those who were there by going to Ag Resource's website and using the password of WILL. If you'd like to download that and take a look at the PowerPoint that Dan had on ethanol, that would be a very good thing for you to do. We'll put that in our weekend newsletter as well. I don't think he's updated his website just as of yet. Just before we came on the air, we tried to get that downloaded. Wasn't there at this point, but he will.
And we invited him, you guys invited him there to stay on the corn panel, but he had to slip away back to Chicago. But, it was a real help, and he was one of the, keynote parts of the program, which was great.
It was a load of fun yesterday. Tell me more about this corn market from your perspective. We had a pretty rough week. We put an outside down day in on Monday. We followed through yesterday. Is this just a correction of that, or are we really going to say more stable than potentially the technicians
might think? With the deliveries being small and the corn, we all saw a lot of and heard about a lot of $4 cash corn, and we also are hearing the word, March deliveries are going to start showing up in the corn market. But the corn market has taken a lot of cash volume, cash movement in the marketplace, not only old but new, and we are of the opinion that it's taken it very well, and we also are getting some reports of some better yields and a pretty good crop in Argentina and Brazil, both on corn and soybeans, but the market seems to be taking it very well. We know it was overbought a little bit early in the week, and now it was probably oversold a little bit yesterday, and now we saw today's correction. So not only am I talked out from yesterday, I'm really talked out today. So, you know, it's one of these days in which you see 20-cent moves and it's in 12, 14-cent moves, and it's about all the system can really handle here for a while.
Well, we'll let you go on that note for the day, okay?
Have a profitable day, Todd, and a real salute to all your help.
Thank much.
Bye.
Paul Cooley of ADM Investor Services in Oakland, Illinois, joins us here on the Closing Market Report that happens on Wednesday afternoons.
Agricultural programming on WILL is made possible by Farm Credit Services of Illinois. Farm Credit Services of Illinois has been providing for farmers' credit and insurance needs for over 90 years, including real estate, operating and machinery loans, crop and life insurance protection, and programs for young and beginning farmers.
A quick look at the weather forecast says tonight across the two-state region in the north, showers of rain mixed with some freezing rain, some sleet at times in a few locations. In central and southern sections, windy periods of rain and thunderstorms, lows this evening from 32 in northern Indiana to 55 in far southern parts of Illinois. Dave Dickey is here now. He'll take a complete look at today's agricultural news. I'm Todd Gleason. You're listening to the Closing Market Report. This is WILL AM 580.
In agricultural news, the Bush administration is holding meetings with Republican and Democrat congressional leaders in preparation for issuing a formal request to renew presidential trade promotional authority. The process is intended to address misgivings that key lawmakers may have about TPA. U.S. Trade Representative Susan Schwab says the administration's hopes is to have a formal position on TPA in the next several weeks. Schwab says the administration's TPA request will seek a broad trade negotiating mandate with the longest duration possible. USDA Secretary Mike Johanns says the computer system in country farm offices across the nation is failing. Speaking before a subcommittee of the Senate Appropriations Committee yesterday, Johanns said USDA is still trying to find the cause of the problem, but will offer a solution within the next 3 weeks.
FSA and the department's OCIO have compiled a comprehensive list of investments and manage services that are needed to stabilize the infrastructure used by FSA to deliver program benefits. I think there's going to be a short-term response to this because building a new system takes time and it's very expensive. It could take 3 years plus.
Earlier this year at FSA offices nationwide, the computer system worked sporadically or not at all. Senate Agriculture Committee Chairman Tom Harkin is calling for more money for federal nutrition programs in the fiscal 2008 budget. Harkin is calling for an increase in the level of assets that food stamp recipients can own, and that number indexed to inflation. Harkin is also calling for the Farm Bill to encourage low-income Americans to eat healthier by providing a bonus for purchase of foods and vegetables. Five Western states have joined forces and will eventually put a cap on global warming. Governors from California, Arizona, Oregon, New Mexico, and Washington State have agreed on a plan to cut their state's emissions of gases linked to global warming and to establish a regional carbon trading system, though they stop short of saying how drastically they will seek to reduce greenhouse gases. The governors said that within 6 months, they will set a regional target for lower emissions, and a year after that, they pledged they will devise a regional cap-and-trade system allowing polluters to buy and sell greenhouse gas pollution credits. Senate Finance Committee Chairman Max Baucus has introduced a bill to create an Advanced Research Projects Agency for Energy. Baucus says the agency would research new energy technologies and develop alternative energy solutions for conventional sources like coal. Ranking Senate Finance Committee member Chuck Grassley says domestic energy options must be expanded if the U.S. is to rely less on foreign oil.
I believe public policy ought to promote renewable domestic production that uses renewable energy, and at the same time it will help foster economic development. Specifically, the development of alternative energy sources should alleviate domestic energy shortages and insulate the United States from hostile governments supplying a great deal of our oil right now. In addition, the developments of renewable energy resources conserves existing natural resources and protects the environment.
Baucus says he plans additional hearings in the upcoming months, focusing on energy competitiveness and conservation. And an Archer Daniels Midland commodity analyst says the next 6 months could be the most volatile time in the history of commodities. Vice President of Research for ADM Investor Services Steve Freed made his comment at the International Sweetener Colloquium in Arizona. Freed says with perfect weather, corn prices could go as low as $2.50 by December. And that's a look at today's agricultural news.
Thanks, Dave. Dave Dickey, of course, your Director of Agricultural Programming here at the WILL radio stations. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason, the host of the Closing Mark Report and Commodity Week, reminding you to visit our website at willag.org. That's willag.org. Well, up next, you know the U.S. government will release its first estimate of the 2007 corn acreage on March the 30th. What that report shows could have a very large impact on the prices at the Chicago Board of Trade. We'll hear what University of Illinois ag economist Darrell Good is anticipating. Admittedly, says Darrell Good, he has more questions than answers as to where the price of corn is headed. The boom and expected boom in ethanol production in the United States and around the globe has the market and the ag economist wading through uncharted waters as it pertains to the price of corn. Now, Good says the next big wake will come after USDA releases its March 30th planting intentions report.
Oh, I think we probably, quote, need to see maybe 10 million acres more corn intended for planting. If that is not the case, then the market's going to have 2 or 3 weeks to try to convince farmers to plant more corn after that report comes out. On the other hand, if it's up around 12 or 13 million, as some people have suggested, I think that's going to be the top of the corn market near term.
The number cruncher from the University of Illinois believes some new crop corn sales should be made prior to the March 30 release, but he also expects the report won't show the mega increase in corn acres the market wants, even needs, to stay up with demand. And that means a post-release marketing opportunity.
That would be my leaning, yes, that if we get a good bump coming out of that report, would be a good time to jump on it. Of course, folks are going to be talking about weather as well all year long, so you still have to say, how aggressive do I want to be with all of the growing season yet to come? But it's going to be an awfully good opportunity. And if you've got a good insurance program in place, it's one of those unusual years when it's hard to do something wrong.
Good takes time to remind farmers that when the final numbers are out for the government-sponsored insurance program, it is likely to include a $4 price for corn.
If you can guarantee $4 times your historic yield level, times your coverage level, you're locking in a huge gross revenue per acre. I think producers could sleep very well at night knowing that they are guaranteed $600 an acre gross return on a 2007 crop.
The final crop insurance figures won't be released until March 1. Farmers have until the Ides, the 15th of that month, to make their final crop insurance choices. For University of Illinois Extension, I'm Todd Gleason.
Agricultural programming on WILL is made possible in part by a grant from Risk Management Commodities, with offices in Chalmers and Lafayette, Indiana, and Hudsonville, Illinois. Risk Management Commodities provides commodities analysis and recommendations for business and agriculture throughout East Central Illinois and Western Indiana. For information, call 866-837-9027.
On the line with us to take a look at the cash grain market is Kay Whitlock of Terre Haute Grain in Terre Haute, Indiana. Good afternoon to you, Kay.
Good afternoon to you, Todd.
I was a little fearful that I had dropped you on the line there. I did something with the phone line before we got to you, but I'm glad to see you're there. Hey, great day yesterday at the Beef House. Thanks for coming over, by the way.
That's always a meeting I look forward to so much, and I was so surprised at the crowd there. Good tribute to WILL. I think everybody was thrilled to death. It just made it a little bit hard to see when you're in the back of the room, but what a turnout.
Yeah, next year I think we're going to have, I don't know, we'll have to have television cameras in back or turn it sideways. I'm not sure what we'll do, but if we're going to end up with that many people, we're going to have to do something extra.
Absolutely.
But it was a great day. Let's talk about this cash grain market. Were you expecting any kind of jump like this in the markets yesterday, and has your basis followed suit today?
The basis levels naturally weaken up when you see something like this, but because of the sell-off yesterday, there's no drastic changes in the basis. But since January, we've lost 8 or 9 cents out of train values on the upfront months, and probably 2 to 3 on the summer months, and then we've lost a couple cents out of new crop basis levels. But I was very surprised. Day before yesterday, we had that big reversal, and then the downtrend yesterday. Yeah, it came roaring back. These funds are just trying to tell us, I guess, Todd, that they're not ready to sell this off yet.
Are farmers in today making phone calls and asking you to go ahead and take grain?
Not necessarily. Of course, our two arrives are really good because we had a lot on the books to start with. And with the weather being the way it is, we've had lines down the street. But as far as selling, they've pretty much slammed the bin doors. They've got their cash needs taken care of, and they're just going to wait and see where this thing goes from here. And if we do make new highs, that will bring them back out again.
Mm-hmm. No, but we've got a ways to go to get that one done. And, of course, we've got the March 30th planting intentions report yet to come, the prospective plantings report. You told us, I think, yesterday you didn't expect much of a change in your area.
Not in our area. I don't think there will be. Like I say, we were going to be heavy corn anyway, and there will be some switching, but not a heck of a lot. I really don't think there will be. So in this area, nope, not a lot of switches, but boy, there was a lot of variations on what these guys yesterday thought these acreage numbers could be. Their guesses are all over the map.
We won't know until March 30th, and that's just a good guess on the part of the farmers. We really won't know anything until June, will we?
Absolutely right. We sure won't.
What are your bids for the day?
All right, our cash corn today is 408, cash beans are 743, and new crop wheat is 409.
We thank you much.
Thank you, Todd.
Kay Whitlock of Terre Haute Grain in Terre Haute, Indiana, joins us here on the Closing Mark Report on Wednesdays. Time now for your regional newscast.
With this look at AM 580 News, I'm Tom Rogers. Multiple charges are pending against two Champaign men accused of kidnapping an Edison Middle School student this morning. Officers say just past 7 o'clock, the 15-year-old male was abducted from school grounds and beaten while the men forced him into a vehicle. Police discovered the car and stopped it a short time later, where the student was rescued and two men were taken into custody. They're identified as 35-year-old Danny Lyons and 24-year-old James Cox. There will still be 9 candidates on the ballot for 5 Champaign Unit 4 school board seats in April. A man who challenged the petitions of 5 of those candidates withdrew his objection yesterday, saying the school board-appointed election committee wouldn't give him a fair hearing. The power company Ameren is offering some relief to customers who are furious over a dramatic increase in their electric bills. Ameren says it'll offer $20 million in one-time rebates for its largest residential customers. It also says it'll promise to offer more payment options and more financial aid to poor customers. Downstate electric rates were expected to increase by an average of about 50% in January when a long price freeze expired, but some customers say their prices have tripled, quadrupled, or even more. Some lawmakers are pushing to roll back prices and freeze them again, but Ameren and ComEd both say that would create financial turmoil. Illinois' Attorney General says anybody who shopped at TJ Maxx, Home Goods, Marshall's, and A.J. Wright stores from 2003 to 2006 should double-check their financial data. Lisa Madigan says a hacker entered the store's computer systems and accessed credit card, debit card, check, and return merchandise data. Indiana University is expected to have a new president tomorrow. Media reports say trustees will select interim provost Michael McRobbie at a board meeting. He'll then be introduced at a news conference tomorrow in Indianapolis. He would replace current president Adam Herbert. And 190 people in Urbana are sorting through their items as they move into their new home. The long-delayed new Champaign County Nursing Home opened for the first time this morning to residents. The activities director for the facility says it may take a couple of weeks to get all the home's functions running smoothly, but all residents were safely moved out of the old facility in time for lunch this afternoon. I'm Tom Rogers, AM 580 News.
The Carle Center for Rural Health and Farm Safety, a division of Carle Foundation Hospital, is proud to underwrite agricultural programming at WILL. The center helps residents of rural communities with education and training in farm safety. For more information, call 217-383-4606.
You're listening to WILL. This is the Closing Market Report on a Wednesday afternoon. We're joined by Drew Lerner of World Weather Incorporated out of Kansas City. Good afternoon to you, Drew.
Good afternoon, Todd.
You know, last week and the week before, we were talking a little bit about La Niña, El Niño, and you said that you've been looking at some things deeper underneath the ocean level, and that the more often that the NOAA reports come out that suggest the continuation, that you'd get more more firm about what forecast you can look forward to. How are things shaping up at this point?
Well, it still looks like we are leaning towards the drier side of normal for this summer. The key continues to be this La Niña event and how significant it may or may not become. The La Niña is still evolving, but there is now some cooler than usual sea surface temperature in the eastern equatorial region of the Pacific. And that's the first sign of La Niña. There's a lot of cold water deep below the surface of the ocean. It is still upwelling towards the surface, so we're going to see a continuation of net cooling for the next two or three, actually maybe as many as 4 weeks. And that should put us real close to the threshold of a La Niña by the time we finish out the month of March. The question in my mind is whether or not we can get a reinforcing shot of cold air coming, or not cold air, but cold water coming in behind this, to continue the cooling trend on into April and May. And right now, I don't see another pocket of real cold water that is moving toward that region. That doesn't mean it can't develop. The bottom line is if we don't get a reinforcing shot of cold water to move into that region, we will probably be hanging out in a borderline La Niña. And if that's the case, then summer weather will probably not be as dry as it might be otherwise. We may end up with some timely showers and thunderstorms in a drier, biased environment. In other words, we still have reasons to believe that the summer is going to be drier than normal, regardless of whether we have a La Niña or not. But if we do have a La Niña, the drier bias will be a little bit more significant. If we have a borderline La Niña, we may get some timely showers and come out doing all right for the summer.
And can you tell me a little bit about the correlation between summer weather patterns, where things correlate well geographically in the United States and where they do not?
Actually, the only place in the United States that has a very good correlation with La Niña is in the southeastern part of the country, and that is associated with the latter part of summer, late July and August, and on into September. There's a tendency for that part of the country to be wetter than normal. The reason why there's no other well-correlated associations with La Niña in the rest of the country is because the La Niña tends to suppress precipitation in general, and it's up to the other prevailing weather patterns that are present across the nation to determine where the driest pocket will be. I'm in the middle of a study right now which is looking at all of the years in which we went from an El Niño into a La Niña, and over a short period of time, like we are doing this year.
Mm-hmm.
And the preliminary study right now is showing us that there's a tendency for wet springs and dry summers in the heart of the Midwest in those years. But I'm still midway through that. Maybe next week I can give you an update on it.
Oh, great. We'll ask you about it for sure. Very quickly, you probably ought to update us on weather here in the Midwest and maybe a very short note about things in South America, but within the 30-40-second time frame.
All right. Well, here in the Midwest, of course, the blizzard of the week is here for the upper portions of the region. We'll see wind speeds of 20 to 45 miles per hour in the upper Mississippi River Basin tomorrow into Friday. And snow accumulations of 12 to 18 inches will occur in northwestern Iowa into Minnesota, parts of Wisconsin, with 6 to 12 inches surrounding that. For the eastern part of the Midwest and the lower portions of the region, we'll see mostly rain with some snow developing during the weekend. This particular storm system will contribute to the already saturated condition across the Midwest, so some more localized flooding is still going to be possible. This time, the heaviest rains will be in Ohio and Indiana, as well as the upper Mississippi Basin. In South America, conditions are pretty much ideal. No big changes have occurred since last week. We don't see any big problems for a while.
All right, Drew, thanks much.
Have a good day.
Drew Lerner is with World Weather Incorporated out of Kansas City. Joins us on the Closing Market Report Wednesday afternoons. That is today's edition. Have a good afternoon. I'm Todd Gleason.